passage is right now is we're all reading a Bible reading schedule called Read the Red Stuff. It's a systematic reading through all of the words of Jesus Christ in Scripture. And so on these Sunday mornings, we're extracting some of the words that you read during the week, and we're pulling principles of overcoming out of those passages. So if you're doing the Read the Red Bible reading program with us, then you would have read these words earlier this week from Mark chapter 4, verse 35. And this is what it says. It says, "That day when evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, 'Let us go over to the other side.' Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. And a furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said, 'Teacher, don't you care if we drown?' He got up, rebuked the wind, and he said to the waves, 'Quiet, be still.' Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, 'Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?'" There were two storm stories in the Gospels where Jesus Christ exerted authority over the elements. One, we talked about a few weeks ago, was when he walked on water. And then the other one was this passage right here where he rebuked the wind, he rebuked the waves, and he exerted peace in the middle of a storm. And we're going to kind of tear this passage apart today. Before we do, though, I want us to do with this passage what we're doing with our Bible reading. In our Bible reading program, we're simply reading the red without the surrounding context. And for me, it's been a very fun way of reading the Bible, of just reading the words of Jesus. Context is super important, but sometimes we can almost lose some things in the context. And so let me lift these three statements of Jesus out of this passage. In this passage, Jesus Christ said three things. Number one, he said, "Let us go over to the other side." Number two, he said, "Quiet, be still." And number three, he said, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" And these three statements from Jesus, "Let us go to the other side," "Quiet, be still," "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" These three statements from Jesus form a repeating pattern that we will all live through in our life of faith. Let us go over to the other side. This is the invitation to destiny. This is the invitation from Jesus Christ to step into a larger story and a greater adventure. This is the hope of the gospel. Hey, come with me and let's go see what life looks like on the other side of the storm. This is what people touch when they first come and encounter this message. In fact, this is how we lead into discussions about faith with people. We tell people, God loves you, and he has this incredible plan for your life. We tell people, you were born with a purpose, and that purpose will be seen and realized as you walk with Jesus Christ. That's what we tell people, right? In fact, that's what Jesus told people. When he was reaching people for the first time, he used that same approach. One of Jesus' very first followers was a fellow named Nathanael. And in John chapter 1, Jesus called Nathanael. And when Jesus called him, he worked a minor miracle. Nathanael had sat down underneath a fig tree and he was going to think and meditate and collect his thoughts or whatever. And when Nathanael came up to Jesus, Jesus said, "Hey, Nathanael, I saw you under the fig tree." And then he said something to Nathanael that Jesus only would have known by having read Nathanael's mind. It's either amazing or creepy, but he kind of read the contents of Nathanael's heart, and he said something to Nathanael that blew Nathanael away, and he said, "Oh my God, teacher, you're the Son of God. You are the Savior of Israel." And Jesus just laughed. He was like, "Oh, Nathanael, you are going to see much greater things than this. There are always much greater things to be seen in following Jesus Christ. There's always something new, but there are also always storms. There will always be things in the life of an overcomer that arise unexpectedly and that cause Jesus Christ to have to say, quiet, be still. Now, we're reading this right now without context. In context, we know that Jesus was not rebuking the disciples. When he said, quiet, be still, he wasn't speaking to the disciples, he was speaking to the elements. But outside of context, this verse works both ways. There are times in our lives when Jesus has to rebuke the storm outside of us, and there are other times when he has to speak to the storm inside us. There's times when he has to breathe peace and calm into our soul. Has he ever spoken to you that way? Has he ever whispered to you in the middle of a storm, peace, be still, I'm here. Now, this is the tricky part of faith, because lots of people sign up for the adventure because it's adventurous. Lots of people sign up for the let's go to the other side of the sea proposition. Lots of people get on board with that message. They go to church. We respond to God because it's exciting. And yet so many people bail when the storm kicks up. Isn't it so sad to watch somebody turn away right when the storm kicks up? They got excited about the invitation to cross over, but then they bail when the storm kicks up, and you're just thinking to yourself, wait a minute, I've been to the other side of the storm. And if you will hold steady, this isn't your landing point. I didn't bring you to the middle of the lake to sink you. I told you to go to the other side because there's something waiting for you on the other side. It's so sad to watch people jump ship before they get to the other side. Do you know what was waiting for these disciples on the other side, by the way? There was a demonized man waiting for Jesus on the other side of the lake. See, when Jesus said, let us go to the other side, the disciples didn't realize that he was on a rescue mission. One of his boys was hurting, and Jesus was on his way to set him free. This demonized man was so tortured that he was living in a cemetery, cutting himself with rocks and crying. That's pretty low. And Jesus showed up to set him free. And then right after Jesus set him free, do you know what they encountered next? Right after Jesus set that man free, Jesus raised a little girl from the dead. Now, the dad had come up to Jesus before she actually died. So the dad came up to Jesus while she was dying, and he said, Lord, would you please come and heal my daughter? And Jesus said, yes. And so they're walking together en route to heal this little girl. And while they were walking, a woman runs up to them, pushes through the crowd, and she grabs part of Jesus' clothing. And in her desperation, somehow she pulled a miracle out of Jesus. And she was healed in her body. And then the story, we won't read it for time's sake, but the story gets very eerie and very mysterious and very compelling at this point. Because the little girl who was dying was 12 years old. And the woman who was healed had been sick for 12 years. Do you think the dad perked up when he heard her story? The text tells us that the woman told everybody her whole story. Do you think the dad with the dying 12-year-old perked up when she said, I've been bleeding. I've been dying slowly for 12 years. Do you think the dad thought that might have been a sign? Wait a minute. Now, he had Jesus with him, but he didn't have a miracle yet. He was still hoping for a miracle. Do you think he thought, okay, wait a minute, 12 years old, 12-year healing, 12, perhaps God is up to something. Listen, please, overcomers, do not discount the coincidences that show up in your life of faith. Don't be too sophisticated. Don't be too smart. Don't be too educated to just slough off all of the coincidences that happen. No, not every coincidence is from God. We are not foolish people. Christians aren't stupid. We're not living our lives based on the names of street signs that line up with what we ate for breakfast yesterday. That's not how we make major life decisions. But sometimes God is in the coincidences. In fact, last week I was getting the tires changed in my car, and I was doing my Read the Red stuff. I'm doing a different Bible reading plan in the mornings, and then in the evenings I'm reading the Red. And I was fixated in the evening at this car shop on these words of Jesus where he said, let anyone who has ears to hear, hear. And for some reason, I couldn't move past that. And I thought, God, I want to be someone who can hear your voice. And so I was reading it. And then I prayed these words. I said, God, I always want to be able to hear anything that you want me to hear. And as soon as I prayed that internally, I heard a voice across the lobby and around the corner saying, why won't you call me back? I need to know what's going on. I need to know that you're okay. Call me. And then this employee moved from around this little partition, saw me and was a little bit startled. I think he thought he was alone, hurriedly went through a door. And I thought, Lord, was I supposed to hear that? And I thought, Lord, if I was supposed to hear that, let this be the guy who brings me my keys. I had already paid for the tires at that point, and I was just waiting. And I thought, if this was a divine coincidence, then bring him back. Well, the door opened a minute later. A guy came out with my keys. Wasn't him. So I thought, okay, coincidence. I gathered my stuff, opened the door to go outside, practically ran into the man. He was standing right outside the door. So I just said, hey, this may seem a little bit indelicate, but I overheard your conversation. In fact, the whole store probably overheard your conversation. But I said, that sounded rough. Are you doing okay? And he starts pouring his heart out to me, told me his whole story. And then he said, thank you for caring. Now, was that a coincidence that I read those words, prayed the prayer, and heard that voice? Was that a coincidence? Yes. It was a coincidence. A coincidence is a remarkable concurrence of events or circumstances that do not have an apparent causal connection. For Han, a coincidence is a remarkable circumstance or event that does not have an apparent causal connection. So was that a coincidence? Yes, of course it was. But here's what I've learned over the years. Sometimes coincidence is John Doe for God. Sometimes we don't know what to name this thing, and so we call it a coincidence, but it's God. So please, do not underestimate the coincidences that line up in your life. We don't live our lives based on them, but don't discount them. Well, in this story, the little girl died. And so the 12, the sign went away and there just seemed to be no hope. But Jesus said to the dad, don't worry. He said, don't be afraid. It's not over. I know it seems over, but let's just keep walking. And then Jesus Christ raised that little girl from the dead. And the disciples got to participate in that miracle. They got to see what happened. But sometimes people quit too soon. This is a repeating pattern. Let's go to the other side. There will be a storm that I speak to, and I don't want you to be afraid because I'm taking you somewhere. If they had stopped in the middle, the final scene of their faith story would have been a storm. Oh, you guys, I see people come to church all the time, and they get excited about the first part of it. Man, this place feels alive. Something's happening here, and it's exciting, and it's new. But then something goes south. A relationship gets weird. Or somebody is too human and they hurt us and we get offended and then people leave. And when people leave at that moment, their final scene of their church experience is church weirdness. It's pain. But if we would push through, the final curtain would not descend on pain. It would show a clear lake, a delivered man, a healed woman, and a resurrected girl. There's something in front of us that God is taking us to. There's something more. Let us go to the other side. Quiet. Be still. And are you still so afraid? Do you still have no faith? Well, let's walk through this story. And let me pull just a few thoughts out of this about overcoming, and we'll add them to the things we've been learning so far. In verse 35, and we'll read this now with context, it says, that day, when evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, let us go over to the other side. Following Jesus Christ, really following Jesus Christ, is never boring. It's never dull and predictable. Church can be boring. Religion can be deadening. Practices can be dry if our hearts aren't in it. But truly walking with Jesus is never anything less than exhilarating. Just when you know Jesus is going to say, guys, it's the evening. We just sent the crowd away. I'm beat. Let's call it a day. We'll hit it again tomorrow. Right when you know he's going to say that, Jesus says, Let's go sailing. You guys up for a midnight cruise? Let's do something spontaneous. And so it says that leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. Now, that probably simply means he wasn't dressed for a midnight cruise. When you're spontaneous, you're not prepared for the spontaneity because it's spontaneous. But it might be okay for us to lift this question out and just ask ourselves, do we accept him in our lives just as he is? See, sometimes what we really want is a predictable, manageable, tame, not too invasive, churchy Jesus, because I can get my head around that and I can compartmentalize that and I can manage that. But to truly be an overcomer in life, we have to take him just as he is. In fact, we probably could end this series anytime because Isaiah already gave us the quintessential overcoming message a couple of weeks ago when he said that the overcoming life is lived in submission to the authority of Jesus Christ. You want to go sailing at midnight? Let's hoist the sails at midnight. That's the response and the heart posture of an overcomer. So they took him into the boat just as he was, and there were also other boats with him. Now, we don't know who was in the other boats. It could have been the 70 disciples that also followed Jesus. Do you all recall that Jesus had 12 disciples, but then he also had 70 additional disciples who were very close to him? They went out and preached in his name. He empowered them. We don't know anything about their stories. Jesus did way more than what's in the gospel. At the end of the book of John, John said, if everything that Jesus Christ did was written in a book, the world itself would not contain enough books to hold it. Jesus did way more than what we read in the gospels. I wish I could hear the stories of the 70. Imagine the perspectives they have on Jesus Christ. So it could have been those guys in other boats, or it could have just been crowd members who weren't ready to be done. What? He's sending us away? I don't think so. Nine. I'm going to follow him. I want to keep pursuing him. But regardless, there were other boats. And then a furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat. So the pivot of the story here is verse 37. In verse 37, there are circumstances that occur that cause these disciples to have to become overcomers. The Sea of Galilee is a very interesting phenomenon. It's in elevation. It's below sea level. It's actually about 700 feet below sea level, and it's surrounded by these low mountain ridges that form kind of a basin or kind of a funnel almost around the lake. And what happens is the atmosphere above the water of the Sea of Galilee is very humid. It's semi-tropical, actually. And this funnel of a mountain range creates almost like a sled or a slide where cool air from the Mediterranean, that's just a few miles away, comes rushing down this pipeline and it collides with the atmosphere above the Sea of Galilee. So there are times in the year when there is a battle or a clash in the heavenlies or the atmosphere above the Sea of Galilee and it whips up a storm. Now the Sea of Galilee is very shallow. It's not a real deep lake. So since it's not terribly deep, it's susceptible to gigantic waves being stirred up because it doesn't have the depth holding everything together. And so when that happens, a furious squall can occur. Now, in the Greek language, this phrase, furious squall, means hurricane. A hurricane is a whirlwind on the water. And hurricanes, as we know, are no laughing matter. You've got to know this. These disciples were not crazy to be freaking out in the middle of a hurricane. And you are not crazy when you panic in the middle of your storms. I know he asked the question, why are you afraid? But listen, you're not wrong to panic. It's not wrong. Sometimes people, they start repenting because they feel some fear. That's not wrong to do. If you're in the middle of a hurricane, it's normal. The hurricanes can be packaged a lot of different ways. It could be the breakdown of a relationship. It could be a physical illness decree that you hear. It could be a financial catastrophe. There's a lot of different trappings that the hurricanes can be housed inside of them. But regardless of the nature in which they come, they have the same potential. They have the ability to take you down. This furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. That's an interesting phrase, nearly swamped. We haven't sunk yet, but we're about to. Some of you haven't sunk yet, but you've taken on water. And we're not done, but we're going down. And so Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. Now remember, there were other boats in the lake. For our boys, Jesus was asleep. But for the other boats in the lake, Jesus wasn't even there. And there will always be moments in the life of an overcomer when the storms kick up and it seems like Jesus Christ is absent. And you need to know this, and you need to remember this, and maybe even remind yourself of this. There will always be storms. And I'm not a pessimist, okay? This isn't a gloom and doom talk. There will always be storms. He will always speak to the storm. But there will always be moments somewhere in between when it seems like he is absent. And when that happens, I don't know about you. I'm not checking steps. I'm checking time. Although I need to pick up the pace here a little bit. I'm not getting many in. When this happens, I don't know how I'm able to do this. Maybe I'm just exceptionally talented. I don't know. But even in the middle of a tremendous storm, I always somehow find the way. I have enough ingenuity to find time to throw a pity party. I don't know how I do it. The world's falling apart. It needs all of my attention, but I somehow find time to throw a little pity party. Are any of you like that? Have any of you ever thrown a pity party in the middle of a storm? In fact, can I read you the definition of a pity party? This is from the Urban Dictionary. Pity party is a way of experiencing grief in which you spend your time feeling sorry for yourself and whining endlessly about how miserable your life is. Pity parties can be just for one person or for many people, such as maybe your friends and your close loved ones who will try to comfort you or just be there for you while you keep asking yourself what you did to deserve what it is that's making you so sad in the first place. Pity parties require the proper outfit, which is usually pajamas, because you don't get all dressed up during those feeling sorry for myself moments. Also, you should have no makeup on, or at least only the makeup that you were wearing yesterday. This is obviously for girls. We guys don't have pity parties, do we? And your hair should be undone as well. It also involves tissues and comfort food, such as ice cream, chocolate, potato chips, cookies, cake, and candy. Low-fat food is banned at pity parties. Music is also very important at pity parties, including songs like One is the Loneliest Number or Celine Dion's All by Myself. And any other song that makes you feel like throwing yourself under a rock. Pity parties usually end after you're done whining or if someone breaks it up. This will usually be a cynical loved one who loves you too much to let you drown in self-pity. Self-pity parties are normal. And they're common during storms. You know, it's just human nature to start feeling a little bit sorry for ourselves when storms knock us off course. And listen, I want to tell you something today. That's not bad. It's not wrong to throw a pity party. I want to just give you, not that you need my permission, but I just want to give you permission. You can have a pity party. The Bible is filled with people who had pity parties. Jonah had a pity party outside of the walls of Nineveh. Elijah had a pity party outside the cave. Oh my gosh, Elijah's pity party? He was this fierce, bold prophet who confronted King Ahab and Queen Jezebel and the prophets of Baal. Elijah prayed to die. And then he said, Lord, I'm the only one left. Nobody in all of Israel is paying a price for you like I am. And do you know what God did? Do you know how he responded to these men? He let them pout. He let them mope. And then after a little while, gently, he said to them, okay, you about done? You ready to get up again? Hey, it's not over. Elijah, I've got 7,000 prophets, by the way, who are paying the same price that you are. You ready to run with me again? We've got some work to do. You are allowed to have a pity party. It's just not supposed to last forever. It's not supposed to become the soundtrack of our lives. There were two things said to Jessica and me at Alexis's funeral and her graveside service that were so meaningful. And by the way, when we're talking about overcoming and storms and hardship, I don't just have to talk about the loss of our daughter. We've gone through a lot of storms. We've lived through a lot of pain at different times in our lives. In fact, there's a couple reasons why we fit in so well with all of you here at Grace. One of them is because we are passionate about destiny. We are passionately committed to the idea that God has a purpose and a destiny for every person. And we all share that here at Grace. But the other reason that we fit in so well with you is because we are very comfortable with brokenness. We've had a lot of issues and a lot of pain to work through. In fact, Jessica was preaching at a women's event here at Grace a few years ago, and she was wearing a t-shirt that said, "I have issues." And it's just kind of liberating to admit it before anybody can point it out to you. But when we talk about overcoming, I have to mention Alexis. She lived 3 years and just had the most unbelievable life. 7 surgeries, a whole company of nurses and doctors that cared for her, nurses that watched her at night. It was unbelievable what she went through. And we were kids. Jessica was 22 years old when we had Alexis. And unbelievable story. I actually preached her funeral. I'll tell you the text I read. This was my text for the sermon I preached at Alexis's funeral. I read from Hebrews 13:1, where it says, "Keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some people have entertained angels without knowing it." So my sermon was on entertaining angels, and I shared that I really believe that Alexis was probably an angel that we got to care for those 3 years. And then I reminded everybody, based on the text, that if we continue in brotherly love, we put ourselves in position for angelic visitations. But I preached, and then even though I did the sermon, a lot of people talked at her service. And a pastor got up after me and corrected something that I had said, because I had thanked everybody for helping us. And I said to them, there were so many days when we could not answer the bell for another round, and you all sustained us. And this pastor got up and he said, "Chris, that's not true." He said, "You and Jessica answered every bell for every round." And then the next day we had the graveside service, and the pastor who facilitated that event was a pastor that we were very close to. And he said to us, he said, "I've been thinking about Alexis's life and our relationship." And he said, "In the 3 years of her life, I realized Chris and Jess never invited me to a pity party." And he said, "And we were close enough that if they had invited us, I would have been there. But they never invited me." Now, we did have plenty of pity parties. We just never invited him. But we had plenty of pity parties, and we all could take turns talking, and we could all share the stories of things that caused us to stumble in the middle of a storm. We all have enough in us to make us want to give up and pout. And let me tell you what the root of that is. Verse 38 shows us the root of every single pity party in our lives. Verse 38, Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and they said to him, and here it is, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" The root of every pity party is, don't you care? Nobody cares about me. Doesn't anybody care what we're going through? In fact, Jessica and I were having some of those thoughts just last week. You know, there are always pockets of pain and things that we go through. And we were having one of those times touching a little pain, and we were having these emotions. Doesn't anybody notice? Why are we reaching out to so many people and nobody's reaching out to us? And then we regrouped and we were like, hold on. We could pick up the phone right now and call 20 people who would drop whatever they're doing to pray for us. But when we're in the middle of a pity party, we don't usually think that way. We're not motivated by truth. We're wallowing in the emotion. Are you all okay with this? I'm trying to teach us how to be overcomers today. It's not wrong to have a pity party, but there comes time when it has to come to an end. And so thankfully, in verse 39, finally, Jesus got up and he rebuked the wind and he said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind and the waves died down. There's an interesting arrangement of words in the Greek language for this verse. In our verse, it just says he rebuked. In the Greek language, the word here for rebuke means a mild rebuke. There are some rebukes that are fierce and powerful, like Gandalf rebuking the Balrog in the Fellowship of the Ring. Do you guys see the Fellowship of the Ring? There are some rebukes that are fierce and intense, and there are other rebukes that are a little more like a light slap on the wrist. Let me show you this rebuke from Gandalf on the bridge of Khazad Dûm in Moria when he stared down the Balrog. Should we try again? Only one more time. Well, that sounds disgusting, but that's not the scene. Anyway, Gandalf just unleashes this incredible amount of authority, crushes the bridge, causes the demon to drop. That is not what Jesus Christ did in the boat. In this Greek language, when you study it, basically what Jesus did was a flick of the wrist. See, there are rebukes where you summon your strength and you release your power. And then there are the kind of rebukes that we give to Maya, our little dog. Be quiet. Knock it off, Maya. Shut up. We have never said shut up in our house. Since our girls were small, we never let them say shut up to each other. So we all say it to the dog. But please, don't miss this. That was the level of authority that Jesus exerted. You need to know that about him. It's funny to talk about, but in the middle of a storm, you need to know. There was a place where Jesus was driving demonic power out of people's lives. And you know what he said? He stopped to teach and explain what was happening. He said, if I, by the finger of God, not the biceps or the fist of God, if I, by the finger of God, drive out demons, surely the kingdom of God has come upon you. That's who you're dealing with in the middle of the storm. That's who you're facing in those moments, is someone who can, with the flick of a wrist, turn the tables. So remind yourself. In fact, why don't you just beat him to the punch? Why don't you just take the words from him and say, why am I so afraid? Do I still have no faith after all of this time? Be quiet, Maya. Be quiet, waves. And then the wind died down and it was completely calm. How many of you have lived through a storm? Can I see your hands? And just hold them up for 1 second. You've lived through storms and you're still here, which means you made it through the storm. You will make it through to the other side if we're submitting to and receiving and following Jesus Christ. Let me have the worship team come back up. When Jesus asked the question, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? He wasn't boasting. Jesus wasn't bragging. It wasn't a moment for him to highlight what he had done. He was teaching them. See, teachers are always teaching even when they're no longer teaching. Teachers are always teaching. If you ever have a platform and you're in front of people teaching, or if you're ever in front of a classroom, you're still teaching even when class session ends. In fact, that's why James 3:1 said, not many people should aspire to be teachers because teachers are held to a stricter judgment. What he means by that is that if you're a teacher, you're not just judged on what you teach, you're judged on your whole life. Pat Stahl was my high school English teacher and track coach. One of the most influential men in my life, so much so that I decided I was going to be a high school English teacher and a track coach. I learned so much from him. I learned more from him outside of the classroom. I learned more from him outside of the track than I even learned in. I became friends with his family. He invited me over to dinner a few times, and I got to watch him interact with his wife and with his kids, and I realized I'm learning more watching his life than I ever learned from what he spoke from his life. Teachers are always teaching, even when they're not teaching. And so when Jesus is sleeping in the stern, that's the back of the boat, and they wake him up, and he's kind of groggy-eyed, and he rebukes the storm, he was teaching. And he wasn't saying, hey, guys, I'm going to teach you a lesson so you can get an A on a quiz. He was teaching so that they would know how to speak to storms. He was teaching them in that moment so they would know what to do the next time a storm came up in their lives. Guys, here's how you overcome a storm, is what he was saying. And that's actually the title and the punchline of this whole message, how to overcome a storm. So here's what he said to them, essentially. Number one, remember where you're going. This wasn't a destination. We're going to the other side. I've called you on a rescue mission. And you've got to remind yourself of that when you kind of run out in the middle of the lake. Number one, remember where you're going. Number two, quit being surprised by storms. Why are we surprised after all this time? Why are you shocked when something goes south? We're not pessimists that expect the worst. Just storms pop up. You're a fisherman. You've been on these waters before. You understand the atmospheric pressures and imbalances above the Sea of Galilee. Why are you so surprised? Remember where you're going. Quit being surprised by storms. Number three, cut the pity party short. Now listen, if you have a clinical depression, I probably just sunk you today, and let me just rescue you. If you have a clinical depression, you need more help than just a pep talk. If there's a clinical depression, one of the other things that we're very, very supportive of and promoting of here at Grace is getting medical help. If you need a prescription, we'll give you the names of counselors and psychiatrists. If you are stuck in that place, you need help to help you come out of that moment. So don't sink by this. Don't think it's all just on you and your own willpower. But number three is cut the pity party short. We're going to love each other. We're going to comfort each other, but we're not going to sink together. And then number four, step into my authority. Guys, this is how you rebuke a storm. You stand up, you look it in the eye, and you tell it to be quiet. Because there's another voice on the water that you need to be listening to. And sometimes that storm is so loud that you lose track of the voice of the one who called you in the first place. And sometimes we need to do that. Sometimes you should be walking through your office before anyone gets there, walking through your home when everyone's in bed, and you got to talk to that storm. That's how he taught us. Quiet. I hear you. No more. Be quiet. Peace. Be still. And we need to do that long enough so that we can begin to hear what God is saying to us. Why don't you stand with me? Today, if you are in an appropriate pity party, so if you're in an appropriate pity party, here's your assignment today. Have fun. Enjoy it. Binge. Don't feel bad. Don't beat yourself up for being human. But if you're here today and you're in a pity party and you've been there a little bit too long, take a shower. Comb your hair. Reach out to somebody, whether they're reaching out to you or not. Say, hey, I've been going under and I need some help. And if you're here today, and if you're on top of the world, remember, who's on the other side of that lake? Let's be people on mission. Let's live lives in such a way that when our stories are done, the lake is calm, the demonized guy is delivered, the sick woman is healed, the dead girl is resurrected, and the stories are just incredible.